No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.
Hello and welcome here on this Wednesday evening, January 15th, 2025, to Best of the West, a podcast here for Blake Street Banner. I'm your host, Skylar Timmons, and it's our good buddy Patrick Lyons of Just Baseball hopping on. Patrick, how you doing?
Doing well. International Signing Day. I feel like this is might be like a one-day contract joining Blake Street Banner. This is fun, so I appreciate you having me on.
We're spending our signing bonus on you, our pool money. It's also National Hat Day, so happy National Hat Day to everybody. I made sure to get a Spokane Indians hat to complete my Rockies affiliate collection.
Is that the one you're missing from your set, so to speak?
Yeah, that's the only one, because I have one from each team, and I needed a Spokane one, so I got the one with the fish on it.
That's good.
A favorite of a 2024 MVP, Kyle Karros. That's one of his favorite hats, so...
That is a classic one. Yeah, I just saw a list where the Yard Goats are still one of the top best-selling minor league caps in the entire nation. So, you know, the Rockies have that going for them, I think.
Yeah, some of the best affiliate and their identities going all around. But a lot of good stuff. And, hey, there's still some deals out there. Go support those minor league teams. A lot of good stuff out there. But, Patrick, we're not here to talk about hats, although I could spend an hour talking about hats. And all those favorite old school ones, like your Portland Rockies ones.
Casper Ghosts.
Yeah, the glow in the dark one.
Oh, that one's so good.
Good stuff. But we heard talking, like you said, international signing window opened today. And so there's across the league, we're seeing a lot of just the signings as names and deals will start to roll in for a lot of teams. But the guy at the very top of the list, everybody's waiting to hear about, is one Roky Sasaki, who we have talked about quite a bit last couple of weeks. And it sounds like he's kind of whittled things down to three finalists. And those being the Los Angeles Dodgers, the San Diego Padres, and the Toronto Blue Jays, who seem to be making a little bit of the underdog push here. But it seems like it's getting close. We know between now and January 23rd, when the window closes or when his posting window closes, he's going to make a decision at some point of what sounds like these three teams. And Patrick, what are you taking away from with Sasaki's whole agents, his process of figuring out where he wants to go, that we're down to these three final teams and two of them in the NL West?
Yeah, it's been interesting to see how he's approached this in somewhat of a similar manner to Otani, who, when he was coming over, you know, had these teams with their pitch and their presentation. And, you know, I know at the time the Dodgers had gotten Kobe Bryant to record something for him, which they ultimately, I don't think, actually had used. And they didn't show him until he did sign with the Dodgers in actual free agency. But it is interesting to see him go through this process. And we'll talk about it here in just a moment, but there is one team on that list of three finalists that if he ends up going there, it will almost feel like this was somewhat of a dog and pony show, like it was all again, just for the theatrics, when there's the one spot that it seems like he's been heading towards this entire time. So, you know, was this all for a show, or really is this, you know, a young man who's, you know, been through the ringer? Obviously, you know, his family has suffered some tragedies during his life as a young man. And, you know, he had to deal with some of that in the media over in Japan. And so, you know, maybe a smaller market would be better for him. Maybe being supported by other Japanese players or a good friend of his, like a Yu Darvish in San Diego. We'll kind of wait and see what happens with that. You and I were talking a little bit about the fact that he is going to wait a lot closer towards the end of the January 23rd window, 45 days from when he was originally posted by the Chiba Lotte Marines on December 10th, and why he would do that. And we're starting to see some of the maneuverings in the international signing period opening up, and how, you know, there are deals that are struck with some of these 16, 17, 18 year old players, and how some of them are falling apart. And now there are all of these dominoes that are falling down in a row. And now there's chess pieces on the domino board. Is there a domino board? There isn't. This analogy is falling apart. But I think if you're following along, you like what I'm putting down here, because it really is a series of events that are going to happen when Roki makes his decision. So I think he's giving his next team, whether it be the Jays, Padres, or Dodgers, a little bit more time to prepare and figure out what they're going to do in the rest of the international market.
Yeah, because look at the international pools, and the Rockies in Arizona, they're in that second tier, around $7 million, but then it's Los Angeles and San Francisco are at the bottom with about $5.1 million. So the Dodgers, looks like they're putting their full focus on, we're going to try to get Sasaki. And we're telling guys, yeah, you can look for other deals elsewhere, or you can wait until next year and we'll try to sign you then. But right now they're focusing hard there. And then San Diego and Toronto are kind of in that middle row of about $6.2 million in bonus international pool money. So some of these guys, like the Dodgers, they can afford to wait. But once you start moving up that ladder in the bonus pools, maybe then they can start sweating a little more, like, oh, we need a decision soon and make a push. So it could be maybe the Dodgers, Patrick, are knowing they can afford to hold back, like, 23rd, we can wait. Like, we're not going to be spending too much of our international pool. I wonder if that's part of that strategy, too, if they can play that waiting game until they can iron out all the details with Sasaki.
And the Dodgers are, of course, tastemakers in that international market where teams or players would love to play with them. And another theory out there would be that, okay, so again, whether it's the Dodgers, Padres, or Jays, it doesn't matter. But more so for the Dodgers, if they're now no longer going to be signing certain players that they had agreed to a deal with previously, Teon Cirano, an outfielder who was number 50 on MLB Pipeline's top 50 international prospects, he was told on Tuesday the deal with the Dodgers, that agreement is over with. So he has since signed with the Minnesota Twins. And now the Minnesota Twins have signed themselves a player for a good dollar amount that they probably weren't anticipating on signing. And they might not have even had the money to go after and sign that guy, because that money was tied up in other players. That's part of that domino effect happening. But if you are a player that's going to get minimal money, or any of those dollar figures that are below what gets subtracted from your international bonus pool money, if you're one of those players and all of a sudden the Dodgers now need to fill up their Dominican Summer League team, now you might say to a team like the Orioles or the Rockies or the Athletics, like, hey, I actually might have a better opportunity over here making the same amount of money, maybe even taking a little bit less because of the development that the Dodgers do have. So that is an advantage that they do possess over the Jays and the Padres. But again, at that point, we're not talking about the top 50 and certainly not the top 100 international signing guys, but you are talking about a way of kind of filling in the back, providing a little bit of depth for your Dominican Summer League teams.
Yeah, and it may perhaps then become a gamble on, say, San Diego and Toronto's ends, where they're making these bids, and hopefully the decision doesn't take too long, because they still maybe want to pivot and make some deals in the international signings. But they're in that waiting game. You see where it can kind of the gamble, the game of chicken these three teams might be playing, and Sasaki sitting there as they wait for his decision. Just a really interesting thing. And this brings up this question of, we can focus him in on the Dodgers first here, of would joining the Dodgers be the worst thing for Sasaki or baseball in general? Or is that the best case scenario for everyone involved?
I think if you're Sasaki and you're ranking those choices, or rather if I'm Roki Sasaki, how I would rank those choices, it would be Dodgers followed by Padres and the Jays, probably close behind the Padres. Obviously the new lawsuit now with Padres ownership, which you and Kenneth talked about last week on Best of the West podcast. Recommend folks still go and check that out to understand what's going on with this lawsuit that involves the Padres ownership. That might give you some pause, right? That might make you think twice about going to San Diego. But the Dodgers are still the best team, you know, instead of Sasaki going against a lot of other teams, number one, number two starters. Now he's number four, number five, right? Now you're dealing with a 6-7-man rotation that's going to allow you to have 5 days off between each start, maybe even 6 days off, maybe even a phantom IL stint, mm-hmm. you know, to recover and kind of lessen the workload for you in your first season in Major League Baseball. So the Dodgers definitely provide that advantage in a big way. And pitcher's ballpark, similar to Petco Park, right? That you've got that. And if you're the Jays, you know, you are playing in the American League East, so that does make things a lot harder. So for Sasaki, I think it's Dodgers, Padres, Jays. But to the other part of your question about what's good for baseball, I've talked to a lot of baseball fans, a lot of Rockies fans. Today, I was at an event in Denver, our monthly Sabre luncheon. I invite everybody, if you're in Denver, the third Wednesday of every month, we're at Stoney's Bar and Grill on Lincoln Street in Denver. Come hang out from noon to 1:30. We say that, and then we talk until 2. And we say that, and then we still talk for another 20 minutes, you know, some of the old school guys. But we were having that discussion during our luncheon. Like, if Sasaki goes to the Dodgers, you now have another evil empire like you did with the Yankees in the 2000s, the early and late 2000s, when they were signing up all these superstar players. Now, keep in mind, the Yankees did only win the one World Series in 2009, but they were a perennial contender each and every year. And I think that puts a bad taste in a lot of fans' mouths. I talked about this on the Rockies Insider podcast, you know, between the Dodgers signing all these big players to having just won the World Series and all these deferred contracts, which I think a lot of fans maybe don't really understand the impact of that and how that isn't, you know, finding a loophole or breaking rules. And it's something that other teams could do as well. It makes it very complicated. And at the end of the day, the average fan is saying, you know, why are all these players going to the same team that just won the World Series and is already good? Something's fishy. Something isn't right. I'm just going to turn off Major League Baseball for the next couple of years.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is. It just leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths of, you know, when you're growing up and you see the uber wealthy kid who's got all the nicest things, can do whatever, gets whatever he wants, you know, pick of the litter, and then everyone else is kind of getting the scraps type of thing. And so that's where I always kind of sit of, the Dodgers don't need him. It's just an extra luxury that they can afford to add. And so it's them being the top, the first pick choice pretty much for any free agent. You go down the list of free agents in baseball, I'm sure pretty much every single one of them wouldn't mind signing a nice contract with the Dodgers and be set up for the next 20 years. But so that's what leaves it in. So for the game of baseball, it's diversifying because it's like what we saw with the World Series. It focuses in on just too much individualized teams and players. When we know across the league, there are so many great players, but the teams just kind of get left on the wayside and forgotten. And we just focus on the important teams on the East and West Coast. So it's just adding more fuel on that fire for the Dodgers of, hey, they can get whoever they want. Money is no object. And it's just the monopoly in baseball, which, not my favorite.
Yeah, and again, the average fan is going to look and say, okay, so this guy who's the next big superstar signs with the Dodgers, and it's for $5 million? That makes even less sense, right? And again, mm-hmm. that's going to happen with any team that he signs with. If you're listening to the show, you already know that, you know, he's not eligible to be a true free agent. And so he's subject to just the international bonus pool money. But again, the average fan is going to, you know, take issue with that and just really be turned off, I think, in a major way. And for, you know, Rockies fans who we're typically talking to and talking directly with on a daily basis, they're going to be even more disenfranchised knowing that, again, their team has even less of a shot against the Dodgers. And that might mean even more visiting fans are coming to your ballpark to see the opposing team that you might not get that same opportunity to. And so it just, again, creates a bad situation that, you know, I don't think there's anything the commissioner could possibly do because there are no rules being broken, bottom line. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it could be an unfortunate situation here going forward, but we don't know yet. We still got about another week until the official choice is made by Roki Sasaki.
Yeah, because it's a big decision for him because this is where, in all likelihood, it will be for the next 6 years. No, throughout his time with every team he signs, and who knows? And so it's not a decision to be taken lightly. But wanted to focus here real quick on San Diego of that same type of question, but how much of an impact or how good would this be for the Padres to snag Sasaki amidst all their turmoil behind the scenes, but a team that seems really clock's ticking on them. They're running out of guys in that rotation that will be free agents in the very near future. They need somebody who they can add into that rotation. Same with the Blue Jays, but we're an NL West podcast, so we'll focus on the Padres here. But that's a signing that they desperately kind of need.
Desperate is definitely the word. And for anyone thinking, well, why would Roki Sasaki want to play alongside a Yu Darvish for like a year or two? He's got four more years left on his deal. And, you know, the more conversations you have about this, the more insight or the more theories that come to mind. Like now talking with you about this, I go, maybe that was part of the reason why the Padres gave him that long extension. Some of it, of course, had to do with lowering that average annual salary so that it didn't have the same impact against the collective bargaining tax that does exist there, that they're already in danger of being over once again. So was that part of the mathematics in keeping him around? But I think Sasaki, in a much smaller market, still could allow himself, you know, a prime opportunity to elevate a team in the same way that Ohtani did. Like, say what you will about Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, you know, that group won one World Series, and it was in 2020. Plenty of people, you know, have questioned, but Ohtani definitely took them to that next level and is going to continue to do that. I think Sasaki, in a much different way, could have that same impact when you look at how many players are going to be free agents for the Padres coming up here. We know about all the guys that have been signed to long-term deals that are going to be around for the next six plus seasons, but Michael King's a free agent after 2025. Robert Suarez can opt out, and that looks very favorable to him because he's not making that much money over the next 2 years if he does decide to stick around. Dylan Cease is a free agent. Luis Arraez, this is also his last year with the Padres in 2025. So by keeping Sasaki around, I think that definitely allows the Padres to feel a lot better about their window of contention and could provide that impact, that spark to keep them contenders in the NL West and still probably the little brother of the big brother Los Angeles Dodgers. But I think it provides a lot more of an oomph rather than the Dodgers don't even need Sasaki. If Sasaki goes to San Diego, there's going to be a lot of fans saying, thank you so much. You may have just saved our franchise from complete implosion.
Yeah, no, he's that boost. And like you're saying, extends a window of contention where the Padres could see the walls closing in on him. You get a Sasaki, it gives them some more breathing room of, oh, we got this excellent pitcher for the next 6 years. We're going to keep that window open in contention and hopefully build more around him. So there's these two teams that are the finalists really pushing for it. But then because of that, as finalists have fallen off, we're starting to see the rumblings of our other teams, kind of like you mentioned before, the dominoes falling in other places. Arizona, as far as I know, never got a meeting with Sasaki, but they got Corbin Burnes and had their first presser with him, which You can find a find video of that over on MLB.com in an article. But then you have the Giants as well, who had their presser with Justin Verlander introducing him and said they met with him, but they're not finalists. So, and we know the Rockies reached out at the beginning. Who knows if there's anything more after that. But Arizona and San Francisco, we see then pivot, and they are making the signings in the international field. The Giants took the top position player. I'm going to butcher his name, so I won't try. My brother's a Spanish teacher. Josue de Jesus Gonzalez, a shortstop from the Dominican Republic, signed him for about $3 million. Pretty nice there for them. They also got Dejan Maceres, an outfielder from Aruba. And then the Diamondbacks get Elian De La Cruz, an outfielder, the 27th overall international prospect. So they're out on Sasaki. They've made their pitcher signings, and now they're making some decent moves out there in the international field. So it's cool to see the process moving along once you're out of Sasaki's finalist group.
Yeah, Isaac saying in the chat here over on the YouTube side of things, at what point will the Colorado Rockies see all the big-time acquisitions in the NL West and start to take initiative with power moves themselves? Look, I this season I think is very much a bridge year for them, where you know the Rockies have been talking about being 2 years away for the last 4 years, yeah. And it hasn't really come to fruition, and it really won't be until, you know, they get halfway there, which even halfway there is still not halfway there. It's really a quarter of the way there. But even if they can have a 10-win improvement, you know, 72 and 90 would be, I think, a major upgrade, 11 more wins. There are a lot of people on social media with an article I just wrote for Just Baseball about, like, hey, the rotation's looking solid. They've got depth again. We don't know about the health of Marquez and Senzatella. They've got a good shot at avoiding 100 losses. And yeah, that doesn't look great if that's where the bar is kind of being set. I don't think they're setting the bar at 100 losses, but that's certainly a bar that, you know, you have to worry about if you are a Rockies fan, if they're going to hit that again. And Sasaki on the Dodgers or Sasaki on the Padres makes it that much harder, you know, to avoid that. And so, you know, until you have that big step forward, in 2025 could be that year, it's going to be hard for the Rockies to go out and maybe make some larger moves. I don't think they're ever going to be a team that makes a major, major move. I mean, really, when you think about it, the Chris Bryant signing probably has to go down as one of the top five all-time moves, maybe even number two. Like after signing Mike Hampton to what at that point was the largest contract ever given to a pitcher, the Chris Bryant contract is probably number two. And then you've got a big chasm because it's always been smaller deals. And sure, Ian Desmond was 5 years, $70 million, but that was far from one of the largest contracts ever doled out. So I don't know that they're ever going to be able to do those things. But I think at this point, you know, again, if the rest of the NOS continues to elevate and they're all over 500 and, you know, the Rockies have another really disappointing season, they may have to start to look in the mirror and say, you know what, this might not just happen just because we've got all these young players that were good in the minors or that were good in college coming together at the same time. We still might need more than that.
Yeah. And it's, I think we've seen in the course of the Rockies history, they're always going to march to the beat of their own drum. Hmm. And so they look at the National League West and they don't react to it is what it's always seemed like of, oh, they're doing that. Well, we're just going to keep doing our thing over here. And they'll keep touting the draft and develop. But as we've seen over the past 10 years or so, hasn't worked out too well for them. Our old buddy Evan Lang had a very good article over at Purple Row talking about this. And he's been painstakingly going through the process and continues to extend his charts. But they haven't had a lot of success. And so you can't help but wonder, like Isaac, at what point do the Rockies look at the rest of the division, realize they're doing these things, they're moving ahead, and try to follow suit instead of just kind of sitting in their own corner, playing with their own marbles, and trying to figure out what they need to do. And I think they've been burned so much from those free agent deals, like you've mentioned, Mike Hampton, you know, Denny Nagel, and Ian Desmond, Chris Bryant, Kyle Kendrick. so many of these deals that have the super bullpen have blown up on them and not worked out. You're always afraid they took the wrong lessons from those of, oh, the problem was we gave all this money to this guy instead of this is the guy we gave all this money to. If that makes sense. Like they're not doling out the money to the right people.
Yeah. I think your analogy was probably very apt. The fact that they're playing with marbles. It's 2025. We're doing marbles, but they've been bullied out of all of their other toys. So, I mean, again, very apt. And like you said, reacting to the NL West, like Isaac's getting back to his question, I think they should want to avoid knee jerk reactions.
Yeah.
But when you're getting thumped year in and year out, you do need to have some kind of reaction, and you do need to. I mean, at this point, it's not proactive, but that's almost how you go about it, is not just by reacting to different things. You now have to say, we have to just kind of cut our losses and almost get ahead of the next thing. That's, you're almost being proactive now rather than saying, well, you know what, maybe if we add these two players, and we're going to talk about free agents here in just a second. And there could be a couple bargains that, despite the fact that we know that the Rockies have said that they're not going to be spending any more in free agency. They were looking to cut costs, and you know they already have saving $14.5 million with Quantrill and Rogers being non-tendered. But even if you go and say, hey, you know what, they look a little bit better with this free agent and that free agent on cheap deals, it still doesn't move the needle quite as much because it's more reactive than proactive and saying, you know, we got to get ahead of a couple things and really start looking at 2026 and 2027. Mm-hmm. What moves can we make this year that help us out next year? And we'll find out a little bit more if they do let those young guys play in order to help themselves in 26 and 27.
Yeah, it's always, they go year to year of, we're trying to build up and try to plug the hole until we find something to fix that, instead of proactively going out to try and fix it. So Tyro Estrada, you're going to fill in at second base until we figure out what to do there with one of our other guys. And so it's always kind of stopgap moves along the way, inch by inch. But I don't know what the big moves, the power moves that we're talking about. It's minor league contracts for Keston Hira and Nick Martini, Patrick. Those are the power moves you're getting from the Rockies.
Yeah, a couple minor league. It was international signing day today. I'm not sure if they thought it was international league signing day. Like they're signing a couple of players from AAA, perhaps. You know, and that's another thing too, is the Rockies, I don't think we're tied to any of the top 50 prospects from the international signing period. And so, you know, I think there are a couple, I don't want to say conspiracy theorists, but people that thought hopefully, hey, maybe that's a sign that they are saving their money to go out and get a Roki Sasaki. Or maybe that's them being a little bit shrewd and going back to what we were saying earlier, when the Dodgers or Padres or Blue Jays ultimately say, hey, you know, these five guys that we are going to give all of our bonus pool money to, we can't sign you now because we've got something way bigger and better that can make an impact in the majors right now. It's not a lottery ticket. It's a sure thing, right? You're buying Bitcoin stock more than you're buying a $1 scratch off. So we're going that route. And then, you know, maybe the Rockies will swoop in and go, hey, what's going on? You know, we got a couple bucks over here. Perhaps that will be their strategy. If so, I certainly would tip my cap to them if that was how they go about getting some of these top 50 guys.
Yeah, no, it's pretty thin. And I think the Rockies maybe thought, because Nick Martini played in the KBO, so they're probably going off of that with the international signing. And Keston Hira is a descendant of a Chinese mother and Japanese father. So he's got that lineage. Maybe that's what the Rockies are thinking there with their international signings. But it's just interesting to see them so far out that we heard, hey, they connected with Sasaki, at least reached out. And I'm sure it didn't go anywhere. Or who knows if they even got to have a sit-down meeting. But among teams that were known, Rockies were not among them, which... not surprising.
No, not surprising. Still, Kaz Matsui from 2007, the last Japanese-born player in Rockies history. So it's just not a market that they've really dabbled in that much. And, you know, it's when you're in a division which with a couple teams that do have those connections and have signed some of those high-profile guys, that, again, that goes back to being at a major disadvantage in terms of improving your club and player acquisition in general.
Keep a lookout on the Blake Street Banner social media feeds over on Twitter and Blue Sky. I guess it's called X, but whatever. And over on YouTube and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Patrick, where can the folks find you?
At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, doing the Rockies Insider podcast. Listen to it. Follow the YouTube channel. And also just launched last month the Rockies Insider newsletter. Having a lot of fun with that.
You can find me over on Twitter, at sideline underscore crowd. You can go find me on Blue Sky as well, stimmons13, wsky.social. And then writing stuff over at purplerow.com every week, as well as fansfirstsports.com. And dropping podcasts over with Rocky Mountain Rooftop as well. But until next time, this has been Best of the West. I'm Skyler. That's Patrick. Remember, the best is yet to come.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Kachava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Kachava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags with code FITNESS at kachava.com. That's 30% off for a limited time at kachava.com, code FITNESS.